Okay, can I have your attention again? Sorry, it's so slow. No, sorry, it's not very long. Can I have your attention again? It'd be great if you could have Exodus 20 open in front of you. We're doing a series on the Ten Commandments, and this week we're talking about the fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. A recent article in Huffington Post had the title, Four Reasons to Put Date Night on Your Calendar. And as date night is my favorite night of the week, I thought I'd read that article and see what they had to say about it. And before all you committed singletons switch off and think, oh no, he's talking about marriage again, this does have an application for everybody, don't worry. Winfred Riley says, date night is an essential because couples in all states and stages need quality one-on-one time. While date night alone will not guarantee a satisfying marriage, date night is an investment in the well-being of your relationship. One way among many to nourish and care for your marriage. When I see couples in trouble, I often wonder which came first, the growing estrangement in the relationship or the lack of effort to nurture it. Date night is cheaper than therapy, much cheaper than divorce, and a whole lot more fun. And then she has these four benefits. They are, firstly, it's an opportunity for romance, a quick trip back to courtship, as opposed to an ordinary night out of the house. It's a break from doing. Simply put, date night is about connecting with each other, not about getting things done. It's about fun. Date night is about an opportunity to have some fun together, and it's a show of commitment. Date night shows a willingness to make the other person in your relationship a priority by setting special time aside. And we have found this to be true in our marriage, my wife and I. Every year we book a trip to the Marriott. I call it the Marriott near Slough. Kathy calls it the Marriott near Eaton Windsor. And that just kind of shows our priorities there. And we will often go to the Marriott and we'll settle down on Friday night, and then Saturday we'll go for a walk. We like to walk around Marlow or Henley or Eaton. And as we're walking along the river, hand in hand, in an idyllic moment, she will often turn to me with a look of amazement and say, "Now I remember why I married you." And I do scratch my head a little bit because I think, well, had you forgotten? Had you forgotten why you married me? So it is, we have found this to be very, very useful. But the interesting thing is that you have to remember date night. You have to write it in your diary. You have to write it in pen in your diary. It actually takes the form, if you think about it, of a rule, a law, a commandment. And the reason why you have to do that is because our life is so full of inconsequential but urgent things, they will often swallow up the things which are long-term important, the things we really care about, the things that we value. So keeping date night is often a rule, and it can be hard work. And this is what the Ten Commandments are about. They're about a romance, a relationship, and what it means to make that relationship work. That's a love relationship between a groom and a bride, a father and his children. And here's where what I've said so far applies to each and every one of us. It's not like that the love of God is like marriage, or somehow marriage is the ideal and the love of God is for us to understand on the basis of marriage. It's the opposite. Human marriage, like human families, are temporary, flawed pictures of a more perfect union. A more perfect union, a deeper union. A love which is more satisfying, thrilling, consuming than human romance or love or marriage could ever be. And that's why marriage and love are such a potent force in our society. That's why it drives films and literature and music, because there's a longing for that perfect union, the union for which we were all created. And this is why, if you're married, single, widowed, separated, divorced, or even unsure about your sexuality, this love is for you. This love is for you. It's the baseline of all other loves. Every other love is a poor reflection of this love. Parenthood, friendship, companionship, marriage are all arrows pointing to this relationship, which is ultimately all-consuming, ultimately all-satisfying, and available to you and me. And you cannot understand the Ten Commandments until you grasp that, until you understand what they're pointing at. In the Authorized Version, I like the Authorized Version because I think it's slightly more closer to the Hebrew. In the Authorized Version, it says, "And God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods but me. He says, I saw you in Egypt, and you were running around, and you were worshiping everything. You were worshiping the Nile, you were worshiping crocodiles, you were worshiping flies, you were worshiping everything. And I plucked you out of that bondage, and I set you aside so that you and I could have a love relationship. You were chained to the kitchen sink. I took the chain off, I took your apron off, I booked your favorite restaurant, and I've established that you and I can be married. That's what God is saying to those people. And that's what the Ten Commandments is about. It's about understanding that relationship. The purpose of love and marriage is never to tie people down. The purpose of love and marriage is to provide a base, a solid launch pad from which the person can enter the world based on that relationship. And God says to people like us, he says, my love is not here to ruin your life. My love is here to provide a solid basis of relationship, a strength and security in your life, so that you're able to launch yourself into the world and know the glory of something pure and holy, a relationship that saves you from slavery so that you can live your lives actually freely. And that's why it's exclusive. That's why he says, don't have other loves, don't have other gods. Let me love you and love only me. That's why he says, my name is important. Honor my name, respect my name, treat it carefully, because I define this relationship. And that brings us to the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath. Stick it in your diary. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. He says, the Sabbath will not remember itself. You have to remember the Sabbath, and you have to keep it separate. You have to put in your diary as something important. Take the seventh day of your week and set it aside as valuable, special. Remember the date night that you have with me and keep it special. The Sabbath is date night with him. He says, keep it special. The Sabbath day is when you rest and recuperate and when you meet with the presence of God and God's people and you hear from God's word. It's the day when his glory is revealed. It's the day when we receive his power. It's the day when we receive strength to face another week. Jesus says in Matthew 5, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. It's the day we're filled up with spiritual power, just as Ben was saying. And he says, you've got to insist on it. Look at verse 9. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord, your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son, or your daughter, nor your male or female servant, not your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. God is not anti-work. He says, get hard, work hard. Get jobs and make investments. Work. Make a profit. Share opportunities. I've given you open doors. Walk through those open doors. Make the most of every opportunity. But he says, set aside the seventh day. It is the Sabbath. And people who are working for you, give them the Sabbath. Say, make them take the Sabbath. Say, hey, look, take the seventh day. Don't work 7 days a week. Even if you have animals, don't burden your animals 7 days a week. Give them a Sabbath. And he says, if you're a head of the household, you need to insist that the people in your household recognize the Sabbath. You need to insist on it. Don't let your children break the Sabbath. They won't understand it at first. It'll feel like a rule. But eventually they will get it if you insist on it and make them abide by it. Now, a lot of us here grew up in Christian homes, and I certainly did. And I know that growing up in Christian homes, you get A-levels and guilt. This is the way it works, okay? But he's saying, teach them the rule, but understand. Help them to understand the blessing. Teach them the rule, but help them to understand the blessing. Don't just say, you can't, you can't, you can't. But give them an experience of refreshment, which helps them to see what it's all about. It's like that child, I've used this illustration before, but you say to a child, we're going on holiday to Switzerland. And they say, I don't want to go on holiday to Switzerland. I want to stay here with my friends. I want to be on Game Boy or Facebook or whatever it is. And you say, no, 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 you're coming, you're coming. And they say, well, there's a big fight. And on the morning of the holiday, you get in the car, and they're there with the hoodie up, and they're like this. And you get to the airport, and they're just kicking around. And you get on the plane, and they pretend to ignore you. And you land in Switzerland, and you get in the car, and they're still looking out of the window like somebody's died. And you suddenly get out of the city, and you see the mountains, and suddenly they're transfixed. And you just head off into those mountains, and you start walking through the mountains and seeing the scenes and just being part of that, and they suddenly realize what it was all about. That's the way it's got to be with the Sabbath. You got to show them what is glorious, which is embedded in the rule, and make it accessible. You have to teach your children to honor the Sabbath, to come to church, to worship Jesus. And it will feel like bondage, but it is a rule which sets them free from a far more terrible bondage. When people get in the habit of coming to church, whether they feel like it or not, church, they become healthy. If the church is healthy, you're teaching them the Bible, they're engaging with worship, they're meeting other people, and what happens is that an experience of something glorious breaks into their week. And they're filled up. And being filled up by that experience, they have the power to resist other pressures. If they're filled up by that experience of worship and being with God's people and hearing God's word, then they're no longer slaves, if I can put it that way, to other pressures. Those pressures which crush people and push them to conform. They're able to resist. I got a couple of illustrations. They're many years ago. Those people aren't going to be listening. Most of them are dead. But I want to share a couple of illustrations with you. One is, I remember 20 years ago, there was a young man, and we knew his family, and they were part of our church in Italy. And when he'd been 10, 11, 12, his mom and dad would go to him Sunday morning and say, you know, do you want to go to church today? And he said, no, I'm going to go play football. And because it was an environment where we could do that, they just let him go play football, and they went to church. Because they didn't want to force their child to go to the church. And, you know, when he was 17 and 18, I was pastoring that church, and we'd see him periodically, and I always had a very nice relationship with him. Well, he's now 35, and he's now married to somebody who doesn't love Jesus. And he has children who are growing up without any awareness of Jesus, apart from what their grandparents teach them. And his children are growing up in an environment where they're being exposed to an oppression which is far worse than the rule. They're worried about their appearance. They're afraid of what other people say. And by not insisting on the Sabbath, they have created an environment where these young people are growing up enslaved by forces which are in no way at all loving and kind and caring, but which are oppressive. And as children have to navigate their lives through a quagmire of slavery the world imposes on them. When I was back in Italy last summer, I was talking to another person, and he said, you know, my son is 14 years old. In his school, 14 years old, in his high school in Italy, the girls are paying the boys to have sex with them in the bathroom, in the toilet, so that they would be free of the shame of being virgins. They're paying the boys to have sex with them in the toilet, so they can be free of the shame of being virgins. Can you see the oppression? Can you see the oppression? You set somebody free from a rule, and you set them free to have their lives destroyed by a far more terrible oppression. And it's a slavery that is enforced by the internet and social media. Where can you go? Where can you escape from Facebook? It follows you everywhere. 20 years ago, Monica Lewinsky was President Clinton's most famous victim. And last week, The Guardian caught up with her, and she said something that really struck me. She said, the shame sticks to you like tar. The shame sticks to you like tar. A year ago, she gave a TED Talk, and it was the object of her internet shaming. And she said this, overnight I went from being a completely private figure to a publicly humiliated one worldwide. Granted, it was before social media, but people could still comment online, email stories, and of course, email cruel jokes. I was branded as a tramp, tart, slut, whore, bimbo, and of course, that woman. It was easy to forget that that woman was dimensional, had a soul, and was once unbroken. It was easy to forget that woman was dimensional, had a soul, and was once unbroken. And God says to people, and he says to you and to me, as you're thinking about starting families, he's saying, I brought you out of slavery for something better than that. I brought you out of slavery so that your children would not have to live with that. I brought you out of slavery for something better. Let me be your God. And make sure you teach your children that they can, so that, to respect the day that I meet with you, so that they can be free too. So they can know freedom as well. God is saying it's a rule, but it's never just a rule. Look at verse 11. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. It says God rested on the Sabbath, the word there is Shabbat, from which we get Sabbath. Genesis 2 says, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day God had finished the work he'd been doing, so he rested from all his work. And then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because he rested from all the work he'd been creating that he had done. Does that mean 24-hour periods? I don't know. But it does mean that God, the Creator, made everything. He's not like a human being who takes the raw materials and then changes it. He spoke and made humans. He made the universe. He energizes people. But after the whole process was finished, on the seventh day, he rested. It's a day of worship. And he put that day of worship into the DNA of every person, because we're created in his image and his likeness. And he did it in different forms. In the Old Testament, there's a Sabbath day. But then also he built in a 7-year crop rotation so that the land would have a Sabbath. He built in 7 times 7, 49, 50th year of Jubilee, so that slaves would be set free and so that the land again would have rest. When we started the Eastern Jubilee Trust, we chose it, that name, for that reason, because it's a time of freedom. And God built Sabbath rest into the fabric of the universe. We are biologically programmed to work 6 days and have seventh day for spiritual renewal. But there's more to it. You say, well, that's great. I'm in favor of taking a day off. Absolutely. But what's that got to do with church? Well, the Sabbath isn't just rest. It's about recreation. Recreation, recreation, recreating. It's not about just recreating our bodies, but it's about recreating our psyche, our inner person. And it's a communal thing. When we meet with God, together with his word, and worship in the community, we are being recreated. We are being transformed. And it does not happen in front of a TV. Lounging on a sofa in front of a TV does not recreate you. It doesn't change you inside. It doesn't strengthen you inside. Just as date night recreates the wed marriage, the bride gets together with the one who loves her, and they are recreated. And if you're feeling stressed and busy, I want to ask you, have you been keeping the Sabbath? If you're running around saying, oh, I'm just overwhelmed with stress, fine. Have you been keeping the Sabbath? Or have you been breaking the Sabbath? If you're breaking the Sabbath, don't be surprised if you're stressed. If you're breaking the Sabbath, don't be surprised if you're worn out. Psychology in 2014 did an interesting survey. It said that TV viewing consumes almost half of people's free time, but it has the same enjoyment level as commuting and doing emails, and clocks slightly above the enjoyment of going to work. It's an interesting service, isn't it? He said, interestingly, religion, what we're doing now, they call it religion, is only slightly less satisfying than playing with your children, which takes the top slot. My mother is suffering from Alzheimer's, and every now and then she'll just collapse. And they rush her to the hospital, and they say, the reason why you collapse is because she's dehydrated. She's not drinking enough water. But because she's Alzheimer's, she forgets to drink water. And my father and my sister, God bless them, they just, you know, every day they say, come on, Mom, have a glass of water, have a glass of water. And she gets angry at them. She says, why do you keep forcing water on me? But then 5 minutes later, she's forgotten, so you can do it again. But she said, why do you do this? I don't want any water. She's dehydrated, but she doesn't know how to rehydrate herself. Many, many people, many, many Christians are spiritually dehydrated because they refuse to come into the presence of the one who loves them. They're unable to receive that love and respond back and enjoy the companionship and encouragement of his people. I want to tell you about my own experience of this, because I think when I was studying for this, and when I've been studying for this, I've been really challenged about my own situation. I came to the UK in 1970, and in 1970, in this country, it was a totally different world. It was like a totally different world. Sunday, no shops were open. You'd come to Broadmead on Sunday, and it was just a wasteland because nothing was open. And on Wednesday afternoons, nothing was open. Wednesday afternoon, everybody went home. So you'd kind of be wandering around Wednesday afternoon trying to find a shop open. And there was three TV stations, and no internet, of course, and Sundays could feel kind of bleak. They could feel kind of empty. And I came from the United States, and we also had, you know, very legalistic sense of rules, but they weren't really focused on the Sabbath. And in the U.S., people would go to church, then they'd go out to a cafeteria for lunch together, and as part of the fellowship. And they'd buy a Sunday newspaper. Do you know what I mean? They didn't think anything of it. I mean, they had other crazy rules, so don't worry about that, but they weren't focused on the Sabbath the way the British rules were. And so we were there in the 1970s, and TV viewing on Sunday was especially frowned upon. And my father was pastor of a little church in Bristol that begins with a K and ends with a C. And he had a friend of his preaching. I was 16 years old, okay, 16, 17. He had a friend of his preaching from Denmark, and the guy didn't understand all the British craziness about Sunday. And so his friend preached in the morning. Then in the afternoon, my dad and he watched Dam Busters on TV. And in the evening, he was preaching again. And downstairs, we didn't have chairs. We had pews. It was like a rank. And I was sitting halfway down the right-hand side. I was looking down the pews. And there was my father sitting four or five ranks in front of me. And the preacher announced that he and Wayne had watched Dam Busters that afternoon. And I just saw my father slide into the pew. And I thought all hell is going to break loose. And it did. Monday night, the deacons and the elders had a meeting with my father. And on Tuesday night, we didn't have home groups, we had church night. We were sitting in the hall, and my father stood up and apologized for his sin of watching TV on Sunday. And, okay, now, I'm not saying that what I did was right. Wasn't right, it was wrong. But some of the deacons kind of got up and thank God that Wayne had, you know, repented of his sin. And in my heart, I was seething. I was furious. How dare you? How dare you treat my father that way? I was saying to myself, he's twice the man you'll ever be. How dare you treat him that way? And that experience, I think, formed the way I approached Sabbath. So that when I formed my own family, yes, I insisted that they came to church, but I don't think I really taught them about Sabbath. I don't think I taught them about the rest and the recreation. I don't think I taught them to value Sabbath the way I should have. And last year, when I had my own sabbatical, I spent a lot of time thinking about what does a sabbatical mean? What does it mean to get spiritual refreshment? And that really helped me to understand what the purpose of Sabbath was. And we as Kensington are going to have a sabbatical this year. For the next slide, Tim. Okay, good. There we go. We're having 40 days of prayer, from the middle of June from the beginning of June to the end of July. We want 40 days of prayer. What that means is we're going to be shutting down home groups and shutting down as much as possibly can. On Tuesday evenings, we're going to be having prayer kind of central here and also in Easton and Village. On Wednesday evenings, we're going to be asking home group leaders, listen, gather your home group, even for an hour, just pray, and don't eat together, but just gather together and pray for an hour. On Thursday evenings, we're going to have a time where we're going to be waiting on God and just prayer and fasting. And why are we doing this? You know, a lot of people, I've got to say, are rolling their eyes saying, oh no, yet more meetings. If you're saying that, you don't get the point. You don't understand. This is about renewal. This is about refreshment. This is about doing something and establishing a rule and saying to yourself, I'm going to do this so that the inside of me can be transformed. The inside of me can be blessed. And I want to challenge you. Listen, why don't you say to yourself, listen, I'm going to take two nights a week and I want to go and pray during that period. Give yourself a rule. Say, I want to go spend some time praying and understand what it means to have a Sabbath in my life. At the end of that 40 days, we want to have a week of mission. We hope we got a team from Atlanta, Georgia. Hooray! Coming. And we're going to talk, do a mega mission with a team from Atlanta. And they're just moving into a time of telling people about Jesus. But the way we respond to the Sabbath determines our heart. And we have to look beyond the rule and meet the Lord of the Sabbath. In the book of Mark, Jesus is walking through a field with his disciples on the Sabbath, and they get the grain and they rub it and they eat it. And the Pharisees come to them and say, well, you know what? They shouldn't be doing that on the Sabbath. That's working. And Jesus said, you know what? The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And I am the Lord of the Sabbath. The Son of the Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And he was established, he's saying, I established the Sabbath to refresh people, to set them free. But there's something more. I am the Lord of the Sabbath. And he uses a special title which refers to glory and dominion. He says, I have given the Sabbath sets people free because I set people free. Because I bring freedom and a relationship and a transformation. And Sabbath is a time to meet me in that power and to know that transformation. He says, you no longer have to be slaves to work. You no longer have to be slaves to habits, slaves to your past, slaves to the opinions of others. The Son of Man has come, and he is in charge of all things. And he set aside his authority, and he died for our sin, to break its power, to die for our past, and wash it away, to die for our rebellion, to provide forgiveness. And he says to you and to me this morning, I've seen you all alone. I've seen you crying in your bedroom. I've seen you feeling unloved and uncared for. And I want to tell you that I love you. I want you to know the joy and the glory and liberation of loving me back. And he's inviting you and me to a Sabbath which is in view of a greater Sabbath. Hebrews 4 talks about it, says there's a Sabbath rest for the people of God. And the Sabbath is looking forward to the ultimate date night. The Sabbath rest celebration is coming. And the hope of the Christian message is that there will come a day when we are in this wonderful party, celebrating an eternal Sabbath, celebrating with the Son of Man who has bought us and prepared us and invited us to this party of the Sabbath. And the wonderful thing about Christian life is every so often, the sound of the party breaks into your life. And the sound of that wonderful future comes crashing in for a minute. And that's what we call glory. And it makes worship, it makes praise, it makes time spent in the Word, it makes fellowship just special and beautiful and refreshing and reviving. It's called glory. You know what? We're going to a wonderful party. And I wish every person in this room was coming with us. We're going to a wonderful party, a wonderful Sabbath, and I wish every person in this room was coming with us. Are you coming with us? Are you coming? This morning we're celebrating him. We're praising his name. And my prayer for you, my prayer is the same for my prayer for you, for myself, that God's glory will break in and refresh us as we come into his presence and exalt his holy name. Let's pray.